there's a certain list of issues where I'm kind of like, well, when I have the time and money to just jump into like 6 somatic sessions back to back, then I'm going to deal with that. Like literally my current therapist that I've been seeing for a number of years now, we're like finally getting to some junk drawer issues that I've had. And some of it is down to like, if I've kind of run out of like the chronic stuff that I'm facing in my day-to-day life, that then I know it's time to dip into the junk drawer of the stuff that I've been avoiding, and it's not fun.
I mean, I just want to acknowledge for a second and kind of celebrate the fact that you're running out of the more pressing stuff is actually a great place to be.
Okay, but here's the nature about life though, Jace, is that life will always present you with new chronic stuff to deal
with.
Becomes very easy for me to guide the therapy session away from, but like, let's talk about actually this other thing that I've been thinking. Just this stuff is tricky. I just want to normalize it that that yes, I feel this too. There's stuff that to me feels like it goes beyond my own sense of capacity to cope or willingness to dive into the discomfort.
Welcome to the Multi-Amory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
Whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you.
On this episode of the Multi-Amory Podcast, we're looking at the ways we avoid feeling uncomfortable and how they may actually be making the problem worse. Whether you feel pressure to be happy all the time, or you just can't stand being bored or upset or scared, or you just want to feel better, it can be easy to turn to distractions or quick fixes. And while the three of us all love those from time to time, too much can have a significant effect on our well-being and on our relationships. So today, we're going to be taking a hard look at some of the emotions we try to avoid and explore some techniques for reclaiming our ability to feel our emotions and improve our relationships. If you're interested in learning about some of our fundamental communication tools that we reference a lot on this show, you can check out our book, Multi-Amory: Essential Tools for Modern Relationships, which covers some of our most used communication tools, as well as general thoughts about what even makes a good relationship. You can find links to buy it at multiamory.com/book or wherever you like to get books. Also, check out the first 9 episodes of this podcast, which covers some of our most widely used and shared communication tools. So why are we talking about this?
Well, I love avoiding stuff, if I do say so myself.
You do?
I do love it from time to time as well.
It's funny, my relationship to social media specifically has transformed quite a bit over the last, I want to say, 4-ish, 5-ish years or so. But back in the day when I was first starting to think, I got to change this somehow, I don't like just scrolling mindlessly, I really wanted someone to make a custom program where I could set a certain amount of time where it could tell that once I've scrolled for maybe longer than 10 minutes, that something would pop up that would say, what are you avoiding right now? And I would have to write something in. I would have to write in what I was avoiding.
That's good. I like that.
Now I use the Freedom app myself. This is not an ad. They're not paying us, but I do recommend it to everybody. That's what I've used to kind of really get a curb on that. And that's been great.
And it doesn't do exactly that thing, but it just kind of blocks
certain apps.
That
would be really cool, though.
It blocks stuff. And unlike a lot of the built-in digital well-being stuff, it's actually more difficult to get around. So, it's been much more effective.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very difficult in our world today to not from time to time feel really anxious and really worried and really uncomfortable about a lot of things. There is so much that is coming at us at all times, telling us that the world is an uncomfortable and kind of shitty place at times. And that's a difficult thing, I think, from an existential viewpoint to look at and to feel and to know. And it's understandable to want to kind of numb ourselves of that knowledge. And yet we can do it too quickly or too often, I guess, instead of actually really just living with and dealing with our own emotions.
Yeah, whenever I'm feeling like, maybe I'm a brave person. I will read some Pema Chodron books, because her approach is very much about there's nothing really for you to hide behind, so you may as well stop hiding behind stuff and just lean straight into the most uncomfortable shit you can think of and lean into your fears. And it's always like a kind of experience. Wow. Even just reading her books are very challenging in that way.
Yeah.
There's nothing for you to hide behind. Goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's okay. Just about, I mean, it's very Buddhist, right? It's just about accepting that there's literally nothing real for you to hide behind from your discomfort. So you may as well stop pretending.
Goodness. Right. Okay. Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that type of stuff comes up a lot in various Buddhist writings, of kind of this idea of not trying to just hide and feel good all the time, but actually kind of confronting some of those harder thoughts or more challenging things. But I do think, Emily, you bring up a really good point about part of this whole landscape, and we'll get into this more as we go, but part of it is we have easier access to distractions like social media, but we also, that same distraction can often be the thing that's making us feel like the world is a worse place because of how much news there is and how much attention scary, upsetting things get. And so those get favored.
And people being scary and upsetting and acting in scary and upsetting ways.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
It
gets attention and that gets rewarded, which then makes you see more of it. So the whole thing is, there is a big systemic problem here, right? So I guess just starting out that it's not like something's wrong with you or any of us if we feel this urge to, I want to stop feeling these things and escape it. However, we can get ourselves in trouble with that. I guess kind of we can inadvertently be making things worse. So to start off a little bit, kind of to set the stage here, the whole concept here is about what's healthy discomfort versus unhealthy pain. And I think that many of us can at least conceptually understand this when it comes to physical discomfort versus pain, but it's a little harder to do emotionally and mentally. I think when it comes to practically identifying the difference between, you know, good, healthy physical discomfort and physical pain, we're not always the best at that, especially if we don't have a lot of experience with healthy pain. And what I mean by that is the difference between, I'm doing some kind of exercise, it's uncomfortable, it's painful, I end up sore. It's not like an enjoyable experience per se on its own, yet it's good for you, right? It will make your body healthier, function better, and feel better the rest of the time, especially as you get older, things like that. Or meditation is, you know, there's like physical discomfort that goes along with that besides even the mental discomfort, but that is an okay thing that you can kind of get through. On the other hand, we have things like, oh, every time I take a step this way, my knee kind of has this sharp pain right along the edge of like my kneecap. That might not be a like, oh, that's good pain, just keep pushing through it. It's like, no, actually, this is something you should either back off of or maybe see a doctor about, because this could be a much more serious thing that's going to get worse if you push it, versus something like strength training that's uncomfortable but gets better as you push it. Again, up to a point. And even with that, it's like if you identify when it switches from good pain to bad pain, it can help you avoid injuring yourself. So I think we can at least conceptually understand that physically. Or here's another good one is building up guitar calluses, playing guitar. It's like your fingers hurt, but it's like, I know that they hurt because I'm building up calluses, not they hurt because I'm going to destroy my fingers or something like that.
I don't know. Jace gave me my very first guitar lesson last night, actually.
That's why it's on my mind.
Yes. Yeah. And I, at the end of that, I was just like, my fingers are going to bleed. How do you do this?
Were you showing her like an A chord or like what kind of stuff were you showing
her? An E chord.
Yeah. Okay.
And on some bass playing. It gave me a little bass lesson as well.
Lovely.
Yeah, I did some of each. Yeah.
Very cool. Wow.
But again, another example of, if you burn yourself and you pull away from it, that's bad pain that you're like, I need to avoid this and try to treat it and fix this, versus building up calluses could be a good pain, right? So learning to identify those when it comes to emotions and our thoughts is what this episode is about.
This seems so relevant to so much of what we have talked about on this podcast with relationships, and specifically with non-monogamous relationships, that often is this big question of this discomfort that I'm going through in my relationship. Is that just, I got to power through it and get to the other side of it and be present with it and then I'll be okay? Or is this really bad and I need to get out of this relationship, or I really need to change what's happening right now? I think especially when you're doing any kind of non-normative relationship where we're not quite sure what the standard is for some sort of healthy discomfort versus unhealthy or dysfunctional pain in the relationship.
I think that's the real challenge, right? Because so many of us may just kind of cut and run early and decide, okay, I'm not going to continue with whatever sort of discomfort or sort of feeling as though this isn't necessarily the right thing. And so I decide to leave versus, oh, I'm going to stick this out, even though maybe it's not really a great relationship for you. And that is the really tricky thing. And I think very challenging to know which is the right way to go. And I guess that's a very personal question.
Yes, right. It's when it comes to feelings, physical feelings or emotional feelings, the only way that we can understand what anyone else is feeling is by watching them and listening to what they're describing. And that's so subjective on their part and then also on our part hearing it. So it is, even in a more normative relationship, we can often not have very clear understandings of what is that bad kind of pain versus this is okay to push through this. So in this episode, we're going to focus more on the side of experiencing some of that healthy discomfort and not shying away from it. But the hope is that by doing that, it helps you build up a better sense of what type of discomfort does fit here to also better identify things that are not this, right? So please don't take this episode to mean all pain is good. If your relationship is upsetting to you, just keep on doing it.
Definitely not.
Not necessarily that, but the point is developing the skills to learn how to tell that difference. That's kind of the whole idea here. So when we get into this, one thing to start with is just talking about dopamine. And it's kind of been a hot neurotransmitter these days. Everyone's talking about it.
One of my favorite neurotransmitters, really.
I mean,
right,
sure.
Right, probably one of the like three that most people know the name of. Right?
Yeah.
So it comes up in terms of, you'll hear people talk about dopamine fasts, or you'll talk about dopamine addictions, things like that. But kind of the short version is that dopamine is the neurotransmitter that feels good. It makes you feel reward for doing something good. And this could be completing a task, someone saying yes when you ask them out, having sex, or doing drugs, getting drunk, you know, various, or eating a bunch of sugar, winning at a video game, getting more likes on social media, right? There's a lot of different ways we can get this. Some of these might be healthier than others, but the point is that our body then releases this chemical, which makes us feel good. It helps motivate us. We've talked before about how having a desire for dopamine helps us achieve things and accomplish things and build better relationships and make new friends and provide
and like eat good food
for our families, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Like all those things. So it's a good thing to have. So if anyone tries to tell you dopamine is bad, if you didn't have it, things would be very bad, right? The key is having a good balance of it. It's having the right amount.
Yeah. So we've evolved to be these dopamine seeking machines, and that's to a certain extent good. But like what I've been really interested in recently is I've been reading some interviews with Anne Lemke, who is the medical director of addiction medicine at Stanford University. And she's also the author of this book that came out recently called Dopamine Nation. And she's highlighted some really interesting findings about how, you know, like when we do something that does produce that dopamine, we eat a piece of chocolate or we have an orgasm or something, that your body does want to be in homeostasis. And so it will stop producing extra dopamine. And the way that Anne Lemke describes it is almost like you have these two little teams of competing gremlins in your brain, that you eat the chocolate and then these little gremlins come that sort of tick up your sensitivity to pain, actually, and discomfort to balance you out.
Wow.
And that's when you have that sensation of, I really want another piece of chocolate, now that like that dopamine has worn off. And so she talks about how sometimes when people are addicted to something, a substance or a behavior or something like that, they will think that their discomfort, their anxiety, their depression is what's driving the addiction, when really it is this, you seek out more dopamine, your body balances it out, you feel bad, you feel cranky, you feel irritable, maybe you're literally feeling withdrawal symptoms, so then you seek more of that dopamine producing thing, your body tries to balance it out again, that the thing that you're addicted to itself, the thing that you are seeking to produce that dopamine, is making it worse, potentially creating the cycle. And what we often see with addiction is then like you need more of it and more of it for, or you need to do whatever the behavior is for longer periods of time or more intensely in order to get that same effect, which then often gets balanced out by an equally intense come down or irritability in some way.
And then there's also a balancing on the other side, where when we do some of these things that are less comfortable, like exercise is an example that she gives, our body will then make more dopamine to balance us back out because we're feeling a little bit in pain, a little bit uncomfortable. Like if you've ever heard of the runner's high that like marathon runners will
never
experience.
Never felt it in my life.
Yeah, I've never felt it either. I think it's a lie.
Yeah, I know. I was like, how much discomfort do you have to get in order to feel that? Because
that's true. I've never been willing to push really to, no. to get
no,
there.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Interesting.
But definitely felt it while working out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it can happen then. I've definitely experienced the runner's high. And the cool thing about that one is the more you do it, the faster you get to the high part, which is cool.
Wow.
But it's essentially that. It's your body saying, hey, you're doing something uncomfortable. Okay, you're still doing it. I better try to fix stuff by making you feel a little bit better. And so on either side, our body is trying to find this balance. So sometimes actually doing the less comfortable thing will ultimately help us feel a little bit better. Now, the next thing here is that if we're doing these things to avoid feeling uncomfortable, especially when it comes to our emotions, like if I'm ever bored or I'm ever anxious or I'm ever worried, turning to social media or gaming or whatever it is, that has been correlated with alexithymia, which is something we've talked about a while back just briefly, but is worth talking about a little bit here because it's kind of related to this whole discomfort cycle of things.
Alexithymia is also known as emotional color blindness. And essentially, if we're to define it, it is basically trouble identifying or understanding or expressing emotions. I think all of us, to some degree, have this at one time or another. We did an episode on this a while ago where we discussed this a little bit, but also just discussing how difficult it is sometimes for us to even know how to put emotions into words. 10% of the population is believed to be affected by alexithymia, at least moderately. So I think some of us have a easier or harder time putting emotions into words, but then those of us who maybe have a moderate to more difficult time, that could be labeled as alexithymia. And there is this link between alexithymia and difficulty separating emotions from bodily sensations. So it's that idea that if you feel something really uncomfortable within your body, which I think often will happen if you're feeling anxious or feeling upset or feeling tired or feeling scared or any of those things, that it's difficult to understand, okay, that's an emotion that I'm having, not just a really crappy, awful bodily sensation. It's like not being able to marry the two together and understand that one is happening because of the other.
Yeah. So there's a scale that's used in a lot of assessments for alexithymia, which is called the Toronto Alexithymia Scale, or TAS. And some of the questions on there, one of them is, I have physical sensations that even doctors don't understand. And you kind of rate on a Likert scale of agree or disagree. Or I'm often puzzled by sensations in my body. A lot of the questions have to do with not being able to name emotions or not knowing how to describe them, things like that. But that there's also these ones about I feel physical things that I don't have a reason for. It can be linked to like hypochondria type feelings of like illnesses, but that there doesn't seem to be any physical cause for. And basically what's going on is that emotions have a physical component to them. And there's a lot of research to back up that they may actually be physical first, before they're ever mental, even though we kind of experience them as if they start as a mental emotional experience and then become physical. There's actually some research suggesting that connection goes the other way around, but that through the way that we're raised or through avoiding experiencing these things or feeling like we're not able to, we can kind of lose the ability to realize these are emotions we're feeling. And so instead, it's like, why am I having this symptom that feels like a nausea or, you know, a tightness in my shoulders or like a pain or like pounding of my heart? Am I having a heart attack? You know, like these kinds of fears that can be very serious. So severe alexithymia can be a quite severe thing. But what we're focusing on for this episode is more in the kind of moderate territory, which affects a surprisingly large number of people, especially men. So there's a term for this that's called normative male alexithymia, which I think for the most part tends to be on this low to moderate end of the scale, although a lot more men in general are diagnosed with alexithymia.
That's really interesting, and I'm not surprised.
It's not surprising at all, right?
Yeah.
Because...
Do you think that's a nature or nurture thing?
I think it's nurture, for sure. But I tend to land on the side of nurture for most things. Mm. But if you think about it, like, as men, we're generally, and this is changing, but generally not raised to think that emotions are okay to feel besides anger, and that's it, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. That fear or vulnerability or loneliness or anxiety, these things are seen as weak or like not unattractive. And so I can't feel those. It must not be that, because if it was those, I would be a weak, shitty, unlikable person. So it can't be that. So it must be nothing. So we kind of lose this ability to describe those. And that has to do with how we're raised. There's a really fantastic video that, if this is something that's interesting to you, there's a YouTube channel by this guy named Dr. K called Healthy Gamer GG. And his whole deal is, he's a psychotherapist. His whole thing is making videos explaining psychological phenomena to gamers. So generally his audience is kind of like preteen through young adults, you know, maybe 20s, 30s.
He's specifically
men.
Aiming at, yeah, male gamers,
yeah.
Generally, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. People who play like competitive online games like Fortnite or League of Legends or whatever, those sorts of things, Apex Legends, like those types of people who can get very addicted to the gaming side of things. Anyway, his channel's great. He very much speaks to that audience and tries to speak the language of that. So he can be like a little bit crass and a little bit intense sometimes. But I love what he's doing, that he's actually kind of putting this out there in a way that will actually reach some people who really need it. Anyway, he's got a lot of videos about alexithymia that will have titles like Why You Feel Nothing, or
wow,
How I Go Through Life With No Emotions, or, you know, things like that to kind of get you to go, oh yeah, that might be me. Let me go check that out. And one of the things that he talks about is that there is stuff you can do to treat it. Also that he sees a growing number of women showing up with it. He thinks that that mostly has to do with this correlation between social media and technology use as a way to kind of numb out, especially starting at a younger age, with men being raised, like boys being raised, where it's more okay to express your emotions. So he's like, it's getting a tiny bit better for men and it's getting worse for women, but it's also kind of getting worse for everyone because of technology and how easy that is as an escape. So anyway, very interesting. But one of the things that he talks about is like, it's going to be uncomfortable as you get better from it. Like, it's going to be this, it gets worse before it gets better. Because when you first start learning to identify and face and be present and mindful of those emotions, they're not positive, happy emotions. So they're going to be difficult. So quick shout out to episode 348, Transforming Feelings into Words, where we talked about the emotion wheel. And that is actually something that can be used in alexithymia treatment to kind of work your way from the inside of the wheel, which are like big emotions like sad, angry, happy, out to the more nuanced things of insecure, or, you know, kind of those more like nuanced emotions, is kind of learning how to identify these as you move farther out in the circle.
So there can be some negative effects to avoiding discomfort, avoiding emotions on a habitual basis, outside of just creating, you know, dependencies on your brain or creating this particular addictive cycle in your brain. It also reduces your ability to cope with stress in general. It encourages a lack of self-awareness and emotional intelligence. It can contribute to mood disorders, anxiety disorders, and then also suppression of emotions increases the stress response. And then if your stress coping ability is reduced as well, this can be yet another vicious cycle that happens. But it can also impact your relationships as well, that if you're avoiding your emotions, or if you're really not able to even pinpoint your emotions and talk about them, that can be a stumbling block to emotional connection. It can make it really difficult to understand and respond to what your partner is feeling, or for your partner to understand and respond to what you're feeling. And then also that can lead to communication breakdowns, because if you can't really identify and express, well, when you were just on your phone and not paying attention to me when I was trying to talk to you, if you can't hit the nuance of I was feeling ignored, I was feeling lonely, I was feeling confused, whatever it is, and all you can do is act out or shut down or something like that, that there probably isn't going to be any resolution there or mutual understanding.
This is really interesting for me because I feel like I've had partners in the past who it's as though I can't really discuss complex emotional things with them, or almost like we're speaking different languages. And I think that if people don't have the words or the understanding of what's going on within them internally, then it is going to be really difficult to be able to have those types of conversations with them. Even with all of the tools that the three of us have and that we're, you know, trying to give to the world at large, if somebody is unable to really discern and understand what's going on within them at a very basic level, then how can you really have a conversation that is as complex as some of the ones that we tried to have with our significant others? It's going to be kind of impossible. So this is very basic and yet extremely important.
Yeah.
This is also helping me connect the dots on a particular relationship from my past where I was with someone who he really identified that he was just like super chill and laid back and very even keel all the time. And he really kind of harshly defended that to a certain extent, you know, a lot of like denying being upset too much and always really kind of coming back to this very even keel place, or at least an alleged even keel place. And he also had so much medical anxiety. And I would probably label it as hypochondria as well. All of these weird, the same thing, like weird health issues that would come up that doctors couldn't really explain or like put a diagnosis on, but they would still prescribe stuff, which would kind of add into this cycle. And yeah, that's giving me some question marks of, I wonder if those two things were connected. I don't want to get all conspiratorial with it, but it does seem like it tracks.
Yeah. And it's like Emily was saying, these are all very fundamental skills that are kind of like the prerequisites to having good communication in your relationships.
Yeah.
And kind of what I'm hoping that we can get at in this episode is to not just say, you should be more emotionally available, or you should communicate better about your emotions, but to say like, but how? It's like, sure, maybe I realize I need to do that, but how? And part of that is learning to be a little bit more mindful. And by that, I mean, when you're feeling these uncomfortable things, just realizing that the being uncomfortable can be okay. And it could actually be really important, not just okay, but like necessary to learn how to identify those. And now, of course, you might be saying, but I don't want to. And so that's what we're going to get into next, is all the reasons why you might not want to do this, or all of the objections that you might come up with. But first, we're going to take a quick break to talk about supporting this show. It's really important to us to be able to put this out into the world for everyone out there for free. And we do that in a couple of ways. One is through direct support on our Patreon. If you go to multiamory.com/join, or just find us on Patreon and join there, that directly helps support our show. And of course, as a thank you, we have various tiers and rewards and our amazing private community on Discord. But also we have our advertisers who really make it possible for us to keep this show going and to keep it growing. And so please take a moment to check them out. If any seem interesting to you, use our promo codes. That really does directly help support our show.
Support for Multiamory comes from Paired. So recently on Paired, I got suggested this game called Guess the Emotion, where it presents you with a number of scenarios where you're supposed to give the answer for yourself of what's true for you in that scenario, and then what you think is true for your partner. So for instance, one of the questions was, you're having a serious discussion with your partner, but your partner is struggling to maintain eye contact. It's probably because they're what? And so you answer that for yourself, right? And so I'm like, okay, if I'm having a serious discussion, I'm not maintaining eye contact, then the answers were distracted, lying, focused, or something else. And my guess for Jace was that it was because he was distracted, but that your answer was actually, oh, it's focused. Really?
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the theme. The one that blew both of our minds was, there's this question that says, you're cuddling in bed together when your partner turns away from you. It's probably because they feel what? And the answers were tired, upset, like being a little spoon, or something else. And I assumed, okay, if Jace is turning away from me in bed, it's because he's tired. But then it turns out it's because you want to be the little spoon, which was also my answer. And you also thought that it was just because I was tired. So now I know to little spoon you when you give me that signal. But what I loved about this is that it really goes to show, and like Jace and I have been together for 10 years, that you can still have these assumptions about your partner that you don't realize. And I really appreciate that Paired offers all these opportunities for us to clear that up and discover new things about each other.
Yeah, we've been having fun using Paired pretty much every day, sometimes multiple times, just finding some of these fun quizzes or questions or discussion prompts or sometimes picture prompts. So for those of you who want to get in on the fun, this is an app we're talking about called Paired. It's a relationship app for couples. So you and a partner download the app, you pair your accounts together, and then every day you get questions, quizzes, games like this to stay connected and also have conversations about them. And it's really fun, like these examples Dedeker was talking about. Some of them are silly and goofy. Some are actually very serious. And it's really cool to have that variety of things to keep those discussions going.
Whether you're just a few dates in or have been together a long time, it's time to lighten the mood and have fun with your partner by using Paired. Head to paired.com/multi to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. Just head to paired.com/multi to sign up today. Connect with your partner every day using Paired. A happier relationship starts here.
Multiamory is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've been spending some time recently thinking about my own social battery. Now, if I was going to define and describe my social battery, I would say that's kind of like an early model smartphone where like you use GPS once for 5 minutes and it's down to like 2%. Like that's the robustness of my social battery.
I don't think you give yourself enough credit, but okay.
Well, that's so interesting because I've been trying to be mindful of it. And recently, a couple weeks ago, I was with a group of people where I found, oh, my social battery is actually really charged around these people. And when I left that group of people, I felt like I still had this energy, which was something that I immediately then went unpacked with my therapist of like, I'm an introvert. What does this mean? Oh my goodness, yada, yada, yada. And having that connection with my therapist through BetterHelp has been really great that I can constantly check in with her and essentially give her all this data about what I've discovered about myself, about which interactions energize me, which ones drain me, so that she can help empower me to build a social life that isn't constantly draining my battery.
If you're thinking about starting therapy, or maybe you've done it in the past and are interested in getting back into it, BetterHelp makes it really easy and convenient. It's entirely online. It's flexible, suited to your schedule. You just sign up and fill out a questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And if that match doesn't work out, you can switch at any time. You don't need to give them a reason or write them a breakup letter or anything like that. So you can look around and find someone that fits for you so you can build that really cool ongoing relationship like the one that Dedeker has with her therapist.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/multi today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/multi. And now we're going to get into some of the reasons why many of us may not want to feel overwhelm or discomfort or fear or anger, all of those things, because yeah, it does
suck.
It doesn't
sound very fun when you put it that way.
There's a lot of good reasons to not.
Definitely. And yet, I think that we've tried to highlight some of the good reasons why it's okay to feel those things. And honestly, would all of us want to feel good all of the time? I mean, maybe the answer is yes, but it puts into perspective the times when we do get to feel good. It gives us some context for realizing like, hey, I've had some really shitty moments in my life, and this moment right now where I'm feeling on top of the world is because I have gotten myself to that place where, yeah, like I've been through a lot and now I get to have a great time in this moment. And I don't know, we can't have everything be good all the time. So Just going to put that out there. But it's also understandable when you don't want to feel shitty, because that does suck too. So let's go down a list of some of the reasons why we may not want to feel discomfort. The first is this feeling and fear of emotional overwhelm. So a lot of us may think that facing my discomforts will overwhelm me emotionally. I think that's a really understandable one. I think a lot of us don't necessarily know, especially if we have varying degrees of alexithymia, we don't really know how we're going to react in a situation where we're feeling a large amount of discomfort. And that may be really scary to us. And we may feel concerned that confronting uncomfortable emotions could lead to an inability to cope with the intensity of those feelings. Even if you are looking at really big decisions in your life, you may want to put those decisions off because you're like, shit, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this. It may lead to something that ultimately is going to really be sad or difficult for a while, and I just don't want to feel that, so I'm not going to even go there.
And sometimes the emotions and feelings that we're avoiding, it can be that that emotion first showed up at a time when we didn't have the ability to cope with what was going on. You know, there's a reason why so much of our shit stems to childhood, at a time when we were young and not developed and didn't have knowledge and didn't have skills. And so sometimes in order to protect ourselves, we had to find ways to avoid it because we really didn't know how to deal with it. But then we can sort of get stuck in that assumption that it's always going to be overwhelming if I let myself feel this way and I'm not going to be able to deal with it.
And I think that kind of leads us into this next one, which is this belief in ineffectiveness, thinking I've tried to face my feelings before and it didn't help, or it didn't put me in a better place emotionally, ultimately. Maybe again, just because at the time when that happened, you didn't have coping mechanisms to help you through that moment. And maybe now, if you're a little bit older or a little bit wiser or have gone through more things in your life, perhaps you actually will have a bigger capacity more easily to deal with something.
I think there's also that in real life, we lack the little bloating of the achievement that you get for like faced an emotion. And then, you know, you know that you completed it. I remember years ago, someone talking about like, oh, I think mindfulness is bullshit, because there was this study that showed when people who are stressed out meditated, they felt worse. And I'm like, well, yeah, because they're just sitting with their thoughts one time or for a short amount of time. It's like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit worse. It's like saying I'm out of shape, but I went to the gym once and I was sore. So like, that's not a good solution. And I think that we can give up a little too early sometimes on this.
I think there can be this general sense of, oh, it might be overwhelming and I won't know what to do. But then there can be also this more tangible sense of like, really, though, if I sit with this emotion, what am I going to do with it? You know, if I get myself upset, all I will have done is just gotten myself upset and then I don't know what to do, right? So this perceived absence of coping mechanisms or the emotional intelligence to be able to process it or manage it. And this is the basis of DBT. That it's about, okay, what we need is to get people equipped with the right skills and the right tools for being able to regulate and handle their emotions. Related to this fear of overwhelm or fear of I don't know what I'm going to do or I don't really have the skills to handle this discomfort is the fear of repercussions. So this could be, if I let myself feel this way, what if it's going to get worse? Or what if something bad is going to happen? And I think this one is a legit anxiety that if I let myself feel the sadness and I cry a whole bunch and I'm sobbing for hours, if I let myself feel the anger and I'm very visibly angry to the people around me, that that could damage my relationships or that could really make me spiral. And maybe at the other end of it, I won't feel better. Maybe I'm going to feel even much worse and maybe this is not going to get resolved. This happens a lot with anger when I'm working with clients, that anger is one of the earliest emotions that we tend to get shamed out of us because of its negative consequences. And so sometimes people get really scared feeling into their anger, feeling like if I actually let myself feel this, what if I completely lose control? Which is so funny because very few people actually do. We have a lot of inhibiting responses coded into us that helps for most people keep their anger under control. But sometimes there is this fear of this black and white, that if I tip over into too much anger, then something really bad is going to happen. Then I'm going to destroy the house.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not quite as extreme as that, but like I literally had almost that exact conversation with a counselor that I was seeing. This would have been like 16 years ago or something, quite a while back. But, you know, she was talking to me about expressing. Basically, I would say in my modern day, I would say it was about expressing boundaries and also expressing some anger or being upset about certain things. And I just could not go there. I was like, but everyone will hate me. Like, I will ruin every relationship I have. Everyone will hate me. I can't do that. It was a really confronting thing to even think about. And what she said there was, tell people first. Don't just spring it on them, but like let them know this is something that you're working on, to try to let them be on a team with you a little bit and understand they might get a little bit upset by some things, but that's kind of part of the process. And it was a slow many year process of like figuring out how to unravel all that. So I just want to say like I feel super sympathetic to this concern, because like, yeah, 100% was exactly feeling that, like, but I can't because there's going to be repercussions. The next one we have is a comfort in familiarity. So on the other hand, you could say, well, but I mean, avoiding discomfort works for me. Playing video games all day, every day works for me. Why should I change?
Or pretending that I'm super stoic. That works for me. I think there's a lot of people hung up on that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Pretending that I'm just so unaffected and I'm a real rock of a person, right? That just can't be shaken by anything. Like, well, that's working for me. People seem to react well to it. Or like, I feel fine. Why is this a problem? And unfortunately, a lot of times it's like, yeah, it's not a problem until it is.
Yes.
And then everything falls apart. That's when your partner's like, hey, I'm sick of being with someone who sits on the couch every day. Or your parents finally kick you out because they're like, you need some motivation to get you out there to actually do something because as it is now, you're not, right? Like there's a lot of different ways this can look, but yeah, this could be when you're losing your job, losing your partner, losing relationships and friends. Like it can have very serious consequences, but they might not happen till later. So better to get ahead of it. And then related to that is kind of what the stoic thing is, the vulnerability of it. It's like, well, but people will see me as weak. And I'd say that the second part of that thought is, and therefore unattractive or undesirable or unhirable or whatever goes along with that, right? This kind of stigma and this sort of romanticism of our heroes from movies and games who are kind of unaffected by everything, except when appropriate for them to be sad enough to motivate them to take action or something, right? That we can get caught up in that idea and then feel like, well, I couldn't ever express being sad or being scared or being vulnerable or being afraid of being alone, because then everyone will go, aha, we knew it. You are a weakling. Get out of here.
I think a lot of people out there look at a thing like emotional growth and they sort of dismiss it, or they say that emotions in general shouldn't control what it is that we're doing in our lives, for instance. So if they see discomfort and can pinpoint, okay, this is an emotional reaction that I'm having, then maybe they will shy away from doing something to help that because they're saying, okay, the emotion isn't going to control me and I don't want it to dictate my actions, instead of realizing that it can hopefully lead to emotional growth and resilience building.
Yeah. My favorite analogy with this one is it's like saying, well, I don't like being held down, and so I don't really believe in or think about gravity ever. And it's like, no, it happens to you no matter what.
Yeah.
But learning about it can then help you figure out ways to fly. But pretending it doesn't exist isn't going to help you.
For sure. Also, a lot of people will say that it just takes too much time and effort to deal with discomfort and to move past it or figure out coping mechanisms for it. And I think that just the belief that the process of facing and processing discomfort, it's demanding. A lot of people think that it's way too difficult, and so they're just not going to invest time and emotional energy into working on that. And instead, they'll turn to these coping mechanisms that are just going to kind of mask the problem instead of facing it head on.
I honestly can relate to this one. I forget if I've talked about this on the show before, so my apologies if this is a repeat, but I have a certain amount of what I call my junk drawer issues, which are the issues or the uncomfortable feelings that are maybe not front of my mind or top of my mind all day, every day, but maybe old stuff, stuff that I haven't dealt with yet. And I think of it like the junk drawer where I'm like, well, I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know where it belongs. I'm just going to stick it here and then forget about it. And it does become a little bit of this, it's going to be too much effort to organize that junk drawer or to like find a place for this screw set or whatever it is. Like, I'm just going to leave it in the junk drawer. Like, there are some things, like seriously for me, where I'm just like, I don't know if I'm ready to deal with that yet. I'm just going to not think about it. And that's how I'll deal with it, is just not thinking about it, or just avoiding the things that make me think about it. And that leads me to this one where I feel very called out by also is having a preference to just leave it to the professionals in the sense of, well, when I get into therapy someday, then I'll deal with this stuff. You know, I don't really have the ability to deal with it on my own, or it's going to be too big and too overwhelming. I really shouldn't deal with it on my own. I'm going to put it off until I can talk to a therapist. Now, sometimes that could be the right choice. You know, you're the one who's going to make that call. But also, part of the whole point of therapy is to develop your own sense of resiliency so that you're not reliant on a therapist the entire time. But I'm definitely guilty of this one. There's a certain list of issues where I'm kind of like, well, when I have the time and money to just jump into like six somatic sessions back to back, then I'm going to deal with that. But I've got things that I want to deal with. Are you surprised, really?
A little, yeah. Just because I almost thought that you were saying that you were called out by this because you are in the therapy sector. Nah. And that you're like, how dare people don't come to me as soon as they can.
Nah, man. I got like literally my current therapist that I've been seeing for a number of years now. We're like finally getting to some junk drawer issues that I've had. And some of it is down to like if I've kind of run out of like the chronic stuff that I'm facing in my day-to-day life, that then I know it's time to dip into the junk drawer of the stuff that I've been avoiding, and it's not fun.
I mean, I just want to acknowledge for a second and kind of celebrate the fact that you're running out of the more pressing stuff is actually a great place to be.
Okay, right? but here's the nature about life, though, Jace, is that life will always present you with new chronic stuff to deal
with.
Becomes very easy for me to guide the therapy session away from, but like, let's talk about actually this other thing that I've been thinking. Just this stuff is tricky. I just want to normalize it that yes, I feel this too. There's stuff that to me feels like it goes beyond my own sense of capacity to cope or willingness to dive into the discomfort.
Yeah. So with all of these objections, I think the point we're trying to make is they're all pretty reasonable, but also I would argue that none of them are good enough reasons to put these things off completely or to put them off forever. And that working through this is going to involve, one, listening to this episode and hopefully feeling like, yes, this is important enough. This is something that's valuable enough to do, even if it might be uncomfortable. But also generating some understanding of yourself and kind of have a little empathy for yourself, too. Don't feel like, just tear the Band-Aid off and kind of force it. Right? You might want to seek some guidance from a professional or maybe someone else in our online community. You could form a little group of like, hey, let's support each other in trying to do this. You know, finding some way to help you get into that and navigate the complexities of this is really important because it is hard. There's a lot of reasons to not do it. And hopefully we can get into now some things that you can do and some tools you can do that I'm hoping are something that feels reasonable. It doesn't feel like, oh, I just suddenly have to face every bad feeling all the time, every day. Because I don't think that's reasonable and I don't think that would be very helpful. So we're going to get into that. But we're going to take another quick break to talk about some sponsors. And hey, you know what? If you don't like listening to ads, you could also become a patron. Because we have some tiers where there are ad-free episodes that also come out early. So you can have these powerful tools before anybody else and also not have to listen to ads in the middle of it. But of course, if you are here listening to the ads, it does help us a lot. If you check them out, use the promo codes and links because they do directly help support our show and to keep this going. This episode is brought to you by Uberlube. Discomfort can be good for you, but not when it comes to having sex. And for that, lube, and especially a high-quality lube, is essential. Really, it's truly the most important thing. Uberlube is our favorite. We've all three of us been using it individually for years now. And honestly, anytime I have to use another lube, it's just a little disappointing because it just feels so much better. Doesn't have any scent or taste and doesn't stain any of your sheets. It's fantastic.
Uberlube is a luxurious, high-grade silicone lubricant made from clean, body-friendly ingredients. It's just silicone with a little vitamin E. And its simple ingredient list makes it widely used by people with sensitivities to other lubricants. You are in control of how long it lasts. It doesn't leave a sticky residue. It just kind of feels like a nice moisturizer when you're finished with it. Also, there's no flavor or scent. Like Jace said, it will not stain your sheets, which I love. And it's latex compatible, so it's safe and effective to use with condoms.
Right now, Uberlube is offering Multiamory listeners a special offer of 10% off and free shipping when you use our code MULTIAMORY at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use code MULTIAMORY at uberlube.com. So if you're someone who's identified that maybe you need to start leaning into discomfort and uncomfortable emotions a little bit more, what are some things that we can do? I think a really good place to start is just see if you can identify areas where there may be tolerable or healthy discomfort. Some of this is going to be identifying what is situational uncomfortable feelings versus chronic uncomfortable feelings. So, you know, what is temporary discomfort that I'm going through because I have to face a difficult conversation or I'm going through a life transition versus long-term patterns of ongoing discomfort and ongoing emotional avoidance. So this is things like identifying in your life when boredom pops up. A super easy way to identify this is whenever you grab your phone, like literally whenever you grab your phone, chances are very high that it's because you're bored or there's something uncomfortable going on. For me, I've really identified that if I'm in the middle of a task, if I'm writing, usually it happens when I'm writing. And the minute that I don't know what to say next is when I feel the strongest urge to look at my phone. It's always that when I'm just like, I'm not sure what to say next, or I'm not sure what word to use next, that even that tiny bit of uncertainty is uncomfortable enough that I'm like, I need to find a little dopamine hit right there. So this is probably the easiest thing for you to track to get a sense of that, right? But there can be other things like, you know, you can have the little moments of loneliness or little moments of frustration or annoyance. This is in contrast to having panic attacks all the time or having really overwhelming PTSD episodes or crushing depression that is getting in the way of your ability to live your life, that it is important to distinguish the different shades of discomfort, of like the stuff that maybe you could lean into, that you can learn to tolerate, learn to get curious about, versus something where maybe you need to go get some help. And some of this is going to be, when you identify those areas, is adopting that growth mindset, right? Acknowledging that, all right, I can, you know, like when I'm writing, especially, I have to remind myself, it's okay. I can sit in this discomfort of not knowing what I'm going to say next. I can just lean back in my chair. I can space out a little bit. I can stand up. I can go get some tea or something. I can literally do so many other things to just wait through that moment of discomfort instead of immediately reaching for the thing that's going to make me feel better right away. But you have to have that sense of, I can accept that this could be good for me, that this could help me grow. And also some of it is developing that body awareness, actually starting to pay attention to the physical cues, that when you notice, okay, I am bored or I am feeling not sure what I should do next, and scanning to see, how does that feel? Does it feel like a tightness in your chest? Does it feel like a restlessness in your legs? Or does it feel like an absence of feeling as well? That can also be really interesting to track, that if you scan your body and you're like, I don't notice anything, how does that feel to not notice anything in your body? There's going to be some information here.
Some tangible tools for navigating emotional discomfort may include things like a mindfulness practice. So that can be observing emotions without judgment, which can hopefully foster self-awareness and non-reactivity. It can be journaling, something that Dedeker just talked about that Jace loves, that I have really found is super important when I'm going through extremely difficult times emotionally, that just getting it out on paper is so helpful instead of having it just kind of be internal, be inside of you, to get it out there in some way. And often that for me is journaling. It can just feel really great. And then you can also look back on it and sort of see, okay, this is where I was in this moment in time. And it's great to be able to see, you know, where you are now versus how you were feeling then.
Just a quick note on this, because I know that it's become like a meme now about Jace being the one who's always encouraging journaling exercises. I think that the interesting thing here is that it's the writing, not the keeping a journal for me.
Yeah.
That I actually almost never have looked back at any journal entry I've ever done in my whole life. And most of them are in notebooks that have been thrown away or I've gotten rid of. I think that there's a keeping a journal thing, which is one thing and is really cool to be able to look back. Like Dedeker does that. And she always has these cool stories of like, hey, 4 years ago is when we went and did this thing and I felt this way.
Oh, wow.
But for me, what I really appreciate is what you just said, Emily, of like just getting it out of my head.
Yeah.
Onto something else. It kind of gives you that sense of like, I did something about this without just like ignoring it or distracting or whatever.
And then you can also name it to tame it. We talked about this in episode 348, where we were discussing kind of figuring out how to name emotions, how to understand emotions, understand what's going on in our minds and bodies and brains. Because simply just trying to label an emotion or say, like, I feel anxious in this moment, it can help reduce the intensity of that emotion. If you can't name it, then that sometimes can make it feel more overwhelming to you and kind of increase the fear-based response of, I don't know what this is. I'm just having a really intense emotion. Instead, try to name it, try to tame it.
And using an emotion wheel can help with that.
Definitely.
To kind of be like, I don't know quite what this is. I often run into this actually, where I'm like, I'm feeling sad. I'm not sure what this is, but an emotion wheel can be a helpful tool for being like, okay, it's in this area. What are some of these other words? Do you think maybe it's one of these? Could it be one of these? As a way to sort of explore that. The next one here goes back to the boredom thing that Dedeker was talking about. And that is to give yourself some time to be bored or uncomfortable without avoiding it. So kind of like Dedeker was saying, how she's writing and feels that urge to pull out her phone, where it's like, okay, I'll do something else. I'm going to go get some tea. I'll go for a quick walk, or I'll just like stand up and stretch for a second. Like doing something that's not so clearly distracting, getting my mind away from this thing. So when you feel that urge to turn to something like video games, scrolling on social media, drinking, weed, masturbating, any number of things like that, that's kind of a quick, I'm going to feel good and it's going to distract me, to instead take some time to just let your mind wander. And this is surprisingly hard to do. And so what I'd like to encourage is to think about it not like I won't masturbate or I won't go on my phone, check social media, but just don't do it right away. So an example of this is like when I'm having really busy days, I will sometimes hit this point where I'm like, I'm too overwhelmed. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to go for a walk, and I'll, you know, put on my shoes, go out for a walk, and I'll immediately reach for my ear pods to start listening to a podcast or music or something like that. And what I've been doing recently is right as I start to do that, going, actually, I'm already feeling all over the place and overwhelmed. Let me not do that. And so what I'll do is like the first 10 minutes or so of my walk will just be that. And then I'll say, okay, now I'll listen to a podcast. And usually at that point, I'll make a better choice of what podcast to listen to. So instead of something that's maybe like scary about current events or online security or something like that, I'll listen. I know.
This is the kind of podcast you listen to.
Yeah.
Delving into Jason's mind.
Spooky online security stories.
Yes. That instead, I'll listen to the Secular Buddhism podcast or something that is more about mindfulness or something that is not as much of an escape, even if it's still a little bit of one, right? So what I would encourage you to do is start with small challenges and kind of build up your tolerance for that. And actually, some of the idea for this comes from a lot of guides about quitting smoking, that when you're quitting smoking, one of the things that'll happen is you'll have this urge for a cigarette. You'll have that craving. And one of the tips is to just tell yourself, I have to wait 10 minutes, set a timer, and then kind of go do something else, kind of distract yourself, which I guess in this case, we're saying don't distract yourself. But the same principle applies of after 10 minutes, that urge will have lessened enough that then you might go, actually, I'm not going to have the cigarette. And so in this case, it's that like give yourself that 5-10 minutes of not immediately going to your phone, not immediately putting on Netflix or YouTube or whatever it is. Give yourself a little bit of time, and maybe it'll change the choice that you make in terms of what you consume, or maybe it will change the amount of it, or even what you do. So just kind of give yourself that little time. Or on the other side, you can do what Dedeker was talking about, which is when you're scrolling, stop yourself sooner. Realize, you know what? This page has refreshed 2 times now. I've scrolled too much. I should stop and just sit here for a second. And it can be uncomfortable at first, but there's actually been a ton of research into just sitting and spacing out for a moment being one of the best ways to actually learn new things and succeed in things that you are actively trying to do, even if it doesn't feel like you're working on them, is to just kind of space out for a little bit and not distract yourself.
And if you find yourself with a particular behavior or a habit that is becoming too compulsive or is like taking up time that you really don't want it to be taking up, that dopamine researcher that I was talking about earlier, Ann Lemke, she recommends taking a 30-day break from something. Now, if you have a physical addiction to a substance, we would not recommend doing a 30-day cold turkey break. This is a whole other issue. But I am talking about the things that we've been talking about, like compulsively swiping on a dating app, very, very addictive, or a particular video game or pornography or things like that. And she warns people that like the first 2 weeks are going to suck. You're going to go through being cranky. Everyone around you is not going to like being around you because you're irritable of, you know, all of those things, right? But then at the end of 30 days, your brain is going to be in a more neutral baseline. And it doesn't mean that at 30 days, oh, great, I never have to look at social media again. It's not necessarily about totally kicking it, but it's going to give you a leg up in being able to make decisions about what sort of relationship you want to have to this dopamine producing thing and give you some power back about how you want it to be in your life instead of it being a compulsive thing that you can't really control. And last but not least, if it's not obvious already, you are not the only person in the world dealing with avoiding emotional discomfort. Okay, we all do this. And what that means is that you can reach out and find people to support you in this. I guarantee you, you can find a friend who also wants to kick social media and where the two of you can support each other in that. I guarantee that you can find a family member who is willing to talk to you and you can share about the particular emotional experiences that you both have a hard time dealing with. Of course, this can also be more formal. This could be a support group. It could be connecting with others who maybe understand similar experiences, whether that's a compulsion or whether it's, you know, having a particular traumatic experience that has been hard for you to sit with and to deal with that can really reduce a sense of isolation. And of course, always seeking professional help. Therapy, counseling, coaching is great for these kinds of things, for being able to have someone who can be non-judgmental. Something that often holds people back from therapy is, again, this fear that as soon as I go into therapy, I'm going to have to dive straight into ground zero of my most uncomfortable emotions and all the things that I never want to deal with. And a good therapist is not going to make you do that. A good therapist is going to recognize when you have the capacity for starting to go there and is going to help guide you through the more scary territory at a pace that makes sense for you.
Did we learn something today, everyone?
I learned that I still love avoiding certain emotions.
Don't we all?
Yeah, yeah. Now, I do think this is, for me, has been really encouraging in putting together this episode to think about developing my skills of identifying the emotions I'm feeling. And I think that in general, I'm a fairly emotionally available person. I'm not afraid to admit those. I think I've come a long way in that over the last 15 years of my life, especially. But I still think there's certain areas where I just, it's like they're just areas where like I don't know the difference between like chartreuse and eggplant and violet. It's that thing of like, yeah, I get they're all in this general area, but I don't know how to identify the different ones by name. And so that's something that has got me thinking about that kind of exercise of how to spend a little time, use emotion wheels, things like that.
I feel like I recently did a big thing that I really didn't want to face because I knew how difficult and challenging it would be from an emotional standpoint. And that was get out of a relationship that wasn't really right for me anymore. And so I feel like even just taking the first plunge of realizing, yeah, you can do difficult things and it is going to suck, but it kind of shows me that I am able to keep doing that in other situations too. That I don't just have to avoid the discomfort forever, because hopefully better things will come on the other side of that discomfort.
I love that. That's a great note to end on.
Yeah. We would love to hear from all of you as well on our Instagram. I mean, if you're taking a 30-day break from social media, actually, never mind. Don't even worry about it. Seriously. Like,
we don't want to hear from you.
I will not be offended. We will not hear from you for 30 days. That's super cool. But if you would like to go on our Instagram stories, we're going to be posting the question of what type of discomfort do you avoid that might be better if you faced? Definitely interested to hear from people. You can answer us by responding to the story there. Also, if you want to discuss this further or look for people to help support you in this, the best place is to share your thoughts with other listeners in the episode discussion channel, in our Discord server, or you can post about it in our private Facebook group. You can get access to both of those groups and join our exclusive community by going to multiamory.com/join. In addition, you can share publicly on the social medias, again, if you're not taking a break from those. Multiamory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Emily Matlack, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins.
Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.